Blog Talk Radio.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Good evening, everyone. This is Marty Oakley, and I'll be your host for the next hour and a half. Tonight's show is a special edition, and we're doing it particularly because we want to follow up with the case of Sarah and Gary Harvey. And we'll be getting to that in just a minute. Barb won't be on with us this evening. She is busy trying to design the new website for our Seed Lady Network, but she will be listening in. So we'll be moving on here. If many of you are not familiar with the story of Sarah and her husband, Gary, Gary suffered an accident about 5 years ago. He fell down the stairs, had a traumatic head injury. He should have recovered from this without much problem, maybe with some rehabilitation. But for some reason, it was, and I prefer to call it, he was taken hostage, actually prisoner, by the hospital that he's in, who has been milking his insurance company for about $982,000 a year. Plus, until recently, they were also taking his Social Security and his VA checks. Nobody wants to discuss where that money went. It's been a terrible, terrible ordeal for his wife, Sarah, who has fought tooth and nail to save her husband from the situation, to get him a second opinion, to move him to another facility where he can be treated far better than what he's being treated now. And what this has amounted to is a web of people all connected by one law firm. They either are working for that law firm or have worked for that law firm. They represent the state. They represent the county. They represent the hospital. They've got their claws in everything. But this has been a real cash cow for them. And unfortunately, Gary is the one who has paid the price, along with Sarah, who has tried to save him from it. So I hope everybody will join me in welcoming Sarah back to the show. How you doing, Sarah?
Good, Marty.
No, good. I'm glad to. I just don't know how you've gotten through this, Sarah. I read everything you send, of course, and have followed what has happened with you almost on a day-to-day basis. And can you kind of update us and tell us where you're at now with what's happening?
Well, Marty, I'm in federal court, and that process is in and out. I mean, I don't know as if the corruption is still there or what. I don't want to talk too much about it.
Okay.
I do have a hearing coming up on May 10th.
Okay.
And that's just to disqualify the judge and the attorney general, because the attorney general's job is basically supposed to be, he's supposed to be protecting Gary because Gary's a ward of New York State.
And, right.
And, you know, he's the attorney for my husband's appointed attorney. My husband is suing his attorney for not representing his wishes, preferences, and desires. And I just don't get how the attorney general can turn his back on my husband, who needs the protection, and he's defending somebody that wasn't doing their job.
So you're telling me
my husband's attorney, Kevin Mosier, was not doing his job.
So the state's attorney general is representing the attorney for your husband, who's been charged with negligence, basically malfeasance.
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh,
I
my
mean,
God.
You know, it's pretty sad because, you know, here he can afford his own attorney. He can talk, he can walk, he can, you know, he can pretty much protect himself. Where my husband's laying defenseless in a hospital, surrounded by all of this, all of these people that are all on the same team.
This is absolutely. You know, how many courts have you been in now, Sarah?
I've been in Surrogates Court. I've been in Supreme Court. I've been in the Appellate Court, and now I'm in Federal Court.
Jiminy Christmas.
It just seems like, you know, everybody's connected with somebody.
I just got an email here from someone that said that they had seen some Senate hearing, which we know what those are, and that the abuse being done, guardianship abuse, is by family members. And let me assure you, even according to the GAO, only 4 to 5% is committed by family members. The rest of it is by predatory guardians that are at work in every state. And they are doing it with the complicity of these attorneys, with these corrupt probate judges. This is how they're getting the job done. And they are doing it in each state in exactly the same way, which tells me there's somebody up above all of them that's orchestrating this. Otherwise, they couldn't get away with it. Sarah, we're...
Well, Marty,
I don't, go ahead.
You know, what happened most recently with Gary, and I've addressed this with my husband's appointed guardian. One day I went to visit with him, and I was kicked out of the room because the dentist was coming in to look at his teeth. He came in, I left the room, and I was gone for about a half an hour, and then they let me back into the room. And, you know, they explained to me that the dentist explained to me that they were going to cement a mouth guard to Gary's teeth. So he was in there taking an impression of his teeth. And when I went back into the room, I don't know what went on in that room because I was kicked out, but they do have a surveillance tape. He bit the bottom of his lip, and he bled and bled and bled, and he got this great big huge, I mean, he hardly has a lip left. And I've witnessed before in my observations that they just go in, yank his mouth open, don't say what they're doing, you know, and it startles him. They don't talk to him. They don't do nothing. They just open up his mouth and just start working on him.
Oh,
and, you
God.
Know, with anybody that has compassion, you just talk to the person and tell them what you're going to do. Tell them who you are. And, you know, for my husband to go through all of that torment, and that hurt and that pain, and, you know, whether they cemented the mouth guard to his mouth, I have no idea. I mean, you know,
well,
I don't see anything in there.
Sarah, has anything ever been done to determine how cognitive he is?
He's always drugged up. How do you know?
Yeah, how do you know? Yeah.
You know, I mean, they've got a narcotic cocktail on him. You know, and then this pat 2 weeks ago, he had a bruise on his arm, and it looked horrible. You know, I mean, it looked like somebody grabbed his arm because they looked like fingerprints.
Uh-huh.
And so I called and asked what that was all about, and I was told that it was from a K vitamin injection. And he gets them every week.
Uh-huh.
Well, my concern is, if he gets this shot every week, why don't I see the bruise there every week? You know,
yes.
So I asked to look at the surveillance video that they have over my husband's bed. And, you know, they refuse to show it to me. I mean, they say it's a vitamin K shot. And I say, you know, I want to see if it really is, you know, and they refuse to let me see that tape. I mean, you know, just to take out all questions, all doubt, and just get it out, you know, the trust issue and all of that stuff. You know, why don't we have a little bit of honesty here? Why don't you just let me look at the tape? Get it over with. And then, you know what, that'll make everything,
it would clear everything up, or it would cement your suspicions one way or the other, which is exactly why they won't let you see it. There's obviously something on there they don't want you to see. And even if they did let you see the tape, Sarah, by the time they let you see it, it'll be edited.
Well,
and, you know, I've just, the level of corruption in this and these underhanded people is just staggering. And didn't you recently talk to Senator Gillibrand, a representative? I can't remember if she's a representative or still one of her representatives.
I've talked to quite a few people, Marty, but whether anything come out of it or not, it's you know, I don't know. Because, I mean, there's been a lot of reports made in the New York Times and, the New York Times, I think there was another Connecticut journal or something that was out there about the corruption and the abuse in these cases.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just phenomenal what you read and what you see. I mean, the governor himself has he was going to fire 130 more employees that were people were committed to institutions and stuff like that for abuse and exploitation of developmentally disabled people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll see. I think something's coming pretty close here where they're starting to take a look at the corruption.
Well, it's
like
gotten
in
to the
D. King's case, you know, she had a major victory where, you know, the attorneys are and the guardians are held accountable. They're not immune to this stuff. I mean, they're supposed to abide by what the ward's wishes are.
Well, that's the last thing that usually happens. We've got some other communications here also that people are claiming that, you know, it's family members after the person's assets. That's not what's happening. These are predatory guardians that are using corrupt probate courts to access the elderly or disabled assets. The worst thing that can happen to you at this point in time is to go into a hospital. And before they admit you, what they do is do an asset check on you now.
Sure they do.
Oh, you betcha. They do check on you to find out what all you have. And that isn't just a check for insurance. Once they have your Social Security number, they're running an asset check on you to see what properties you own, how much money you have invested, what you've got anywhere that they can find. And then once you're in, for some reason, something happens in that administrative area of the hospital, and certain individuals are queued up to the fact that they've got a patient with these kinds of assets, and these people come rolling in. They can be from Adult Protective Services. They can be from Social Services. They can be from anywhere, and things can change in a blink of an eye. And you suddenly find your family member, loved one, whomever, is suddenly under one of these predatory guardianships declared under an emergency. This is how they avoid due process. And they begin relieving the victim of all of their assets, their home, their personal belongings, any property, any investments, liquid funds, whatever they can get their hands on, they're doing. In your case, Sarah, it has been mostly, as near as I can determine, a milking of your insurance company. They're just making a killing off this insurance company, aren't they?
Oh, they sure are. And I just can't believe my insurance company is paying it. I mean, my old insurance company in 2010 paid $932,000 for 1 year. And the billing is just outrageous. You know, I can't even find out what stuff they're giving my husband because of HIPAA. They hide under that HIPAA, and it just drives me nuts. You know, I mean, my husband's seeing a physiatrist now. You know, and they won't tell me who the physiatrist is. You know,
what
all
is,
these
what
years,
is this
my
person?
Husband hasn't had a physiatrist. Now he does.
What is a physiatrist?
Gosh. it's something to do with, what was that called in my, it was physician medicine. Something to do with diagnosis. I can't remember how it was, you pronounce that word. Marty.
Diagnostics?
Yeah.
Okay.
Something to do. I mean, I really don't know what it is.
Sounds like something they made up, Sarah, to make more money.
I don't know what it is, and they're giving them occupational therapy. You know, I see that all of a sudden showing up on my insurance claims. You know, see, Dr. Corbelon, he testified that my husband's needs are feeding, toileting, and transfer to keep him from getting bed sores. But you know what? My husband has bed sores, and the high cost of care for those three things, and only high-skilled nurses, he testifies that only high-skilled nurses can take care of my husband, and really, essentially, it's just what parents do to infants, you know, toileting.
Well, Sarah, do they ever get him out of bed? I mean, like put him in a chair?
No. No.
Oh, for God's sake.
No. He's been laying in that bed for almost three years now.
Oh, my God.
You know, and I mean, my heart just, every time I see it, it just breaks over and over and over again because he could be outside enjoying the weather. I could get him in a chair and at least get some fresh air. I mean, you know, just taking him into different environment and surroundings to arouse the senses and all of that. And, you know.
Well, you'd have to get him off the drugs first before he could appreciate it.
Yeah, well, you know, he's probably so addicted to them.
Yeah.
I mean, he'd have withdrawals, I'm sure.
Yes. I'm sure he would, but, you know, I think it would be worth the withdrawal just to bring him back.
Sure.
And, you know, and there's so much coming out now, evidence now, Sarah, about the damage these drugs do, physical damage they do to the body. And why they're being, well, we know why they're being used, is to keep these people sedated, and they're all handler drugs. They're not for the benefit of the patient. They're for the benefit of the people who have to deal with them. And I just don't understand how in good conscience this is allowed to continue. How do you walk in? I mean, even if you're just a hospital employee, how do you walk in and out of that room every day and see this man in this condition and know that a good percentage of it is due to what that hospital is doing to him? How do you do that? I don't understand.
Well, it's because I love my husband. You know, that's how it gets me through it. And I see the strength in him, and he hasn't given up. If he hasn't given up, I can't give up.
Well, I was talking about hospital employees, Sarah, not you.
They do it.
How do they, you know, walk in and out of his room each day?
Because they don't love him.
Yeah,
They don't care about him. You know, they're not related. They're not relatives. It's just a paycheck to them.
Oh, my God.
You know, they're not attached to him like you would your own grandchildren or mother or father or anybody.
I still couldn't do it. I couldn't do it.
I couldn't do it.
You know, we have another guest on with us here. I believe it's a friend of yours, Sarah, you wanted to bring on with you tonight.
Yes,
Dee. You want to make the introduction here?
Is it Dee King?
Yes.
Of Connecticut? Hi, Dee.
She's not talking.
Dee, are you there?
Apparently not.
I don't
hear
her, Marty.
It's a area code 574.
Oh, that's me, Marty. That's Tim.
Oh, hi, Tim. Okay.
Hi. I called in just to sit in the background and listen. So.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Tim.
If you need me, I'm here.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, I thought it was Dee.
I did, too, and he was on, you know, at the beginning, so I thought he came on with you, and I didn't want her sitting there, so we'll wait for her to call in. Sarah, one of the things in all of this that, of course, has just rankled me to no end, of course, is this Senate Committee on Aging and the Elderly, headed up by the nefarious and infamous Herb Cole. Thank God he's leaving office. Has anything ever come out of those meetings?
I know. Not that I'm aware of, Marty. I mean, it just seems like it's getting worse. You know, and they know the corruption's there. There was an article actually back in 2004, I think, it was in the New York Times. And, you know, this guy stole this person's money, and he went and bought himself a mansion out in Hawaii.
Well, wasn't he just special?
And, you know, it says in here that Judge Lipman up here in New York, in Albany, he's the chief judge up in the chief judge up there anyways. And they know about this. And it's like, you know, what have they done about it? They know it exists. I mean, they stole $2.1 million over a five-year period in cases involving 17 incapacitated people. I mean, the grand jury closely examined the case. It was a Long Island City lawyer who stole that money. And,
oh my God! That's the worst.
Oh, hang on a minute, Marty. This is Dee on my phone.
Okay.
Hello, Dee.
Yeah. while she's taking care of that, that's, I think, one of the things that bothers me in all of this is that our elected officials, these senators, these representatives, the same ones that were voting against us when it came to this massive health care fraud they're going to foist on us, they were all doing insider trading. They had time for that. But for some reason, they can't do anything about the guardianship abuse that is going on. They can't find time. That takes years, years, I tell you. But if you want to pass some unconstitutional law or violate your rights or pass some law that protects them, why, then all of a sudden it can be done right now. It's done overnight. It's an emergency. It has to be done right away. We have what is literally tens of thousands of people across the country that are being victimized by this system of predatory guardians. And not one elected official, not one senator, not one representative will do a damn thing about it. None of them. Not
on
the state level.
They're drunk on their power, Marty.
They're drunk, period. These people just absolutely drive me insane. We've got a caller here. Is this Dee?
Yes.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Dee. Thanks
this
for
is the first time, so please don't mind. I don't know what I'm doing.
That's all right. I don't know what I'm doing either. Don't worry.
Well, we're
about
on the same boat now.
There you go. And by the way, everybody, if I bounce off of here real quick, Sarah, Dee, everybody, just keep talking. Whatever's going on with Blog Talk, I get bounced off the show. I'll dial right back in. Just continue on without me. You're all on dedicated lines.
Oh,
so,
thank you.
If I suddenly disappear, that's what happened. But, Dee, I want to welcome you to the show. And Sarah said that you had a very interesting story about all of this that you wanted to share with people. So why don't you go ahead and tell us what your story is?
Oh, mine's a long story. I'll try and make it edited. But in 2005, I live in Connecticut. My dad, who was visiting me from Long Island, his lifelong home, ended up in the hospital, and then after that, they decided that they were going to have him made a ward of the state of Connecticut without giving him proper notice, without notifying him, and also he wasn't a resident of the state as well. The nightmare began then, and in the beginning, I thought these people were going to try and help, and I didn't realize how hideous a situation this could become. You always like to believe everything's nice from the outside. It looks that way. And then it was like opening Pandora's box and falling in. And my dad was incarcerated in Connecticut for 10 and a half months with a battle that ensued with me going back and forth, fighting the nursing home, fighting the probate court, fighting the court-appointed conservator, fighting the court-appointed attorney. It was a horrible nightmare, and my father, actually very bright, and you can see him on YouTube if you ever look him up, Dan Gross, the Daniel Gross story. He was a remarkable person. He told me what to do, and he told me to contact the newspapers. And fortunately, through the grace of God, I met a couple of people that were wonderful, one being a Veronica Halpin, an attorney at Hartford Legal Aid, Marilyn Denny, also an attorney there, and Rick Green from the Hartford Courant, who had written stories about my dad and brought attention to this hideous situation. The conservator benefited by keeping my father imprisoned, and the costs went up from $5,500 to $8,500 at the nursing home for a man that could care for himself. It was so despicable and outrageous. And then the court-appointed attorney who agreed my father was quite capable of knowing what was going on decided that he should be appointed a guardian. And I love the way they call themselves guardians. I don't think angels would want any association with that.
But, yeah, it's a misnomer for sure.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, we've all, most of the people that are involved in NASGA, the National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse, and the people that have helped me through there, Elaine Renoir was wonderful, and I met so many wonderful people that were supportive, and without them, I don't know what would have happened. But my dad finally, through the attention and the help of both Veronica Halpin and an attorney that came forward, an older man, John Peters, they formed a union, and they came up with freeing my dad through a habeas corpus, and then we went to a higher court. However, I want to just bring your attention. At one point, the way the court system works in Connecticut, it was probate court, it's like kangaroo court. And once the attorney was appointed by the then judge, we couldn't get help anywhere. Any agency that would have or could have helped us was not able to, because they said he had an attorney. And although he told them, I didn't choose him, I didn't want him, you know, it was basically one of those situations where you just could not receive any help. And my father and I had to persevere. We had to try and do the things we did. We were threatened at the nursing home that I wouldn't be able to see my father again. Things like that. It was so hideous, you know, causing such stress and grief to an older man who in his, you know, twilight years should have been enjoying himself, not being imprisoned. And the hideous captor, the one that was appointed as his conservator, an attorney named Kathleen Donovan, who in my opinion was the most despicable of all of them. She should have been like a Nazi SS trooper taking her prey. And she kept my father there knowing that she had no jurisdiction over him. And at one point we went on a day visit to New York, and he ended up in the hospital in New York, and she went down there and had him dragged back to Connecticut against his will, and also against doctor's orders. It was just so disgusting to have a person live through that. And in the beginning, you know, you feel like there's some kind of justice with the probate courts, but they make their money from keeping people at their mercy, and that's how they build their coffers up. And
well, the other thing, Dee, is too, and we've seen this in several states, once you become a ward of the state, of course, you no longer exist in the law. You're dead in the law.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
If one of these individuals escapes one of these institutions, if they break out, you know, they issue a warrant to the police or sheriff's department for escaped human property.
I mean, and really, everybody breaks them out, because this is disgraceful. Nobody should be kept from their loved ones. They try and build up the fact that if people are family members and appointed conservators, that they're evil and they're trying to hurt their family members. And yet these people do the most despicable acts under the name of being part of a court system. And they should be, some of them should really be hung out to dry. They're really creatures of another venue. I don't know where they came, how they can even look at themselves in the morning. But they really want to keep people imprisoned, and it's something, I mean, people to them are nothing but a number and money, and that's why they want to keep them there. And if you can get any attention, please do, you know, I mean, bring it to the attention of the public. People don't realize until it's too late, unfortunately, that, you know, this can happen to them. It can happen to anyone.
Yes.
And in the state of Connecticut, all you need are two doctors to say that you're mentally defunct and you can be locked up for life. And this is scary. In my dad's case, we were graced by God to have these people in our lives that helped him get out of that. And then we also went to the higher court, and the judge that freed my dad was a remarkable judge. He wasn't taking any guff from anybody, and he could see right through it. Oh, he was remarkable, Judge Gormley. And it just was a moment in time, I mean, when I think back on it. But we went from there when my dad was finally freed. His attorney, John Peters, said, get the hell out of the state of Connecticut. And we did quickly. However, this woman that was the court-appointed guardian, this Kathleen Donovan, had changed the locks to my father's home. All the personal items that were of value disappeared. We went home there, and we were afraid to go into his own house because we didn't know what would happen to us. Then she had the audacity to come to New York after she was told by the higher court not to disturb or hurt him, and she tried to hurt him further by trying to sue him down there to get money for what. Oh yeah, what happened was she had been building up all the money that she was charging him, and then she wanted to get the money from his reverse equity mortgage, and she didn't do it quickly enough, so she wanted to try and get that money back. She was charging him something like $42,000 for keeping him in prison for 10 and a half months. It just boggles your mind to think that this can happen to anybody in America or to any human being. It's slavery. It's really
beyond. Well, it's human bondage.
That's what it was.
Listen, we're gonna take a break here. It'll just be 2 or 3 minutes. And
sure.
Everybody get a cup of coffee, sit back, and stay with us because we will be back.
Okay.
If you're fed up with the government imposing its rules and regulations on you and your property, you need to order a copy of Brent Johnson's internationally acclaimed bestseller, The American Sovereign. The American Sovereign is over 200 pages of invaluable information geared to help all liberty-loving Americans protect their property from attachments, liens, or levies by the IRS or other government agencies. You'll learn step by step how to lawfully stop paying income and Social Security taxes, exercise your right to travel without a state-issued license, and much more. Order your copy of Brent Johnson's international bestseller, The American Sovereign, for only $69.95 by calling 888-385-FREE. That's 888-385-FREE. Order online at www.freedomradio.us. Shipping is included. Preserve your liberty. Call 1-888-385-FREE. That's 888-385-3733 or online at www.freedomradio.us. The American Sovereign from Brent Johnson, your guidebook to liberty. Is your privacy important to you? Is having all of your assets well organized one of your priorities? Do you wonder if your business and personal estate will be protected for your family and not taken away by government bureaucracies? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then now's the time to find out about Freedom Bound International's Pure Trust. A pure trust organization is protected by the Constitution and is not subject to government regulation. Property held in a pure trust is free from liens, levies, or other actions filed against you. You can find out more about Freedom Bound International's Pure Trust and schedule a trust consultation simply by calling toll-free 1-888-385-FREE. That's 888-385-3733 or log on to www.freedomradio.us. Call us now for information and to schedule a trust consultation. 888-385-FREE. That's 888-385-3733 or online at www.freedomradio.us.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
And we're back. Dee, when you were talking about when you were talking about this woman who was stalking your father, basically, and this is what it sounds to me like what he was doing was she was doing was stalking him. And
Was
anybody able to bring charges against her for this? I mean, did anybody do anything to try to interrupt this woman's activities?
Well, my father filed a lawsuit against the judge, actually, Jody Rellon down, and it went to the federal court where it was shot down by a new judge. Her name was Bryant, Judge Bryant, and she let everybody off the hook. And then we filed an appeal, which went to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in New York City. And most recently, the Second Circuit requested information from Connecticut asking them how they reviewed or viewed attorneys appointed and conservators and also the nursing homes. And recently we had a very positive outcome because the Connecticut Supreme Court said that the court-appointed attorneys are supposed to represent their client no matter what they think, and they're supposed to uphold their wishes, and they are held accountable. And also it was a wonderful decision, and also that the nursing homes are to be held accountable. They have an obligation to protect and care for the rights of their, I call them the victims, but they are their...
They are.
Yeah, they're in their care. And the judges and the conservators get quasi-judicial immunity because they, if the judge approves or ratifies anything that they have done, then they can get off the hook. However, it's going to make people think twice about just signing off on the wishes of a conservator without looking at what those orders are. I think that when a judge has to sign off and say he can be held responsible for his actions, or in most cases judges aren't, but if the conservator is going to be held accountable, he has to think twice. Because if it comes to the public's attention, people have to stand up and shout and say, wait a minute, you can't just lock people away. You can't threaten them. You can't take their rights away from them. You can't keep them imprisoned without having certain rights. I mean, if you want to do anything, you want to present them and preserve them. You know, you can tell a society how they treat their elderly and their children. And I think that as Americans, we have an obligation to stand up and protect our aged people and our disabled people. Anybody who is vulnerable should be protected. And these people cannot get away with this if we all stand up together and state we're not going to allow it. So that's why I feel...
One of the things I looked into when I first got involved with this and was the corruption of these judges, and what you're talking about, immunity, is true to the point as long as they stay within the law.
Right.
Once they step outside the boundaries of the law and violate your rights or legislate from the bench, and that's one thing I have learned through various other legal things I've been involved in, if that judge starts rendering rulings that obviously are not within the law or not within his right to do, but he'll say the law is what I say it is, the minute he says that, you ask that judge, are you legislating from the bench? And I guarantee you, just asking that simple question will bring everything to a halt. The one thing they don't want to get caught doing is legislating from the bench. Like I say, that immunity holds only so long as they are working within the confines of the law. Once they step outside of it, they can't invoke that immunity anymore. They cannot use their office to protect law breaking.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the one thing, like I say, involved in some other things that I did find out. I was hoping, I have a friend named Paul who had put an article up on my site recently called Junk Justice in California. This man had credentials the likes of which I would have loved to have had for my lifetime, but who got caught up in one of these things dealing with the trust and was just absolutely appalled at what had happened. This gentleman has also taught international law, so he came into this armed quite well and won his case.
Oh, great.
But I was hoping, he would call in and maybe give us a little advice here or direct us a little bit.
I think you made a clear statement, though, about people doing things outside the confines of law. But in Connecticut, however, on 2007, one of the things that was great about my father's case and the attention that it did receive is that they changed the law so that probate court hearings cannot be held in closed doors. So now they're open to the public, and that was based on my dad's case. So I'm sure my dad would feel proud of that as he's dancing in heaven. And
wow.
And then
You have some progress there then.
Yes, we've had progress. We've had a remarkable team of people that went to the Second Circuit and defended my father's rights, and that was Sally Zanger of Connecticut Legal Rights Project and Tom Berendt and Royal Stark. There have been a remarkable amount of people that have sincere ethics and care about people and human rights, and as long as people will stand up for them, then we don't have to say that we have to live without them. But when people just give vent to evil, then we will get nothing but people controlling one another's lives and taking their rights away from them. So,
and
you have to really be diligent.
Well, that's what this whole system is about, is devaluing you as a person, taking your rights, and then taking your possessions. It's
right.
A legalized system of theft. And unfortunately, there are human beings caught in this. And I do consider this, Dee, to be human bondage. This is exactly what this is.
Yeah.
It's human trafficking.
Yeah,
at
I
the
do.
Very
Yes, my dad coined this expression. He said, isolate, medicate, take the estate. And I think that is so true. That's exactly what they did, all for greed. There's nothing humane about what their goals were, and the trauma that they caused my dad. And in fact, in my father's case, my father was in a room with a man that had been involved in a double murder. And my father once made an observation and said to me, Joe is a sadist. He said, Joe is sadistic. He could kill somebody. And after that, I found out he was involved in a double murder. My father was so aware, so smart, so intelligent, and they just tried to drug him into oblivion. At one point, I saw my father falling over in front of me. I complained to the head nurse. She told me, oh, it's just an act he puts on for you. It's so, so sad that people will just allow that to happen. And after I finally got my dad out, or the people that worked to get him out did, I had people that worked in that nursing home telling me, they came up to me in the street, that place should be shut down, the things they do, they listen to all my conversations, I'm sorry I couldn't help you, I had my children to support. And it always reminds me of Nazi Germany. As long as we give vent to that evil, they will perpetuate and they will grow stronger. So if people don't stand up and speak out, then they're going to be doomed. And especially with the elderly, because people don't really care. This is a youth culture. They don't really care that much about elderly people. So if you haven't made
now,
some plans...
At my age, I don't want to hear that.
The truth hurts.
Yeah.
Sorry to say that. Well, I always feel like I'm 17 till I look in the mirror. But anyway, cold,
Sarah,
dark
you
reality.
Had wanted to ask the question. What was it?
Well, Jeezy, you're hitting so many issues here that everybody that's a victim knows and realizes, especially about the nursing homes and your loved ones in there, about the care, and people are afraid to come up and tell you that they're listening to your conversations, and you know they do. They document everything you say, and they turn it around and use it against you and make you look bad, or you're in denial, or you know, all kinds of things. Was your dad legally? I mean, did they have anything on him?
Well, the only way, I mean, he happened to be visiting in the state of Connecticut. He was a New York resident. And thank God there was some flaws with how they captured him, literally, and that's how we got him out. But my dad's case was an unusual one. My father was one in a million. I see so many people, and it's heartbreaking. I used to go in that nursing home every single day that I was able to, and I used to see and speak to these people, and they were incarcerated. They were victims, and they used to drug them at a certain time at night so that they didn't have to deal with them. They treated them, I mean, it's just horrible, deplorable, sticking them in this one room, you know, so they can watch television all day long, watching that, and then wanting them to sleep so that they're less trouble. I mean, it's just horrible. It's just,
there was one thing that I read or heard about your dad, that he was like sharing a room with a sexual abuser or something.
No, he was a murderer. I mean, they call him, they can't call him a murderer. They call him a because they didn't convict him of murder. But he was involved in a double murder. He turned state's evidence, and that's why he was convicted of a lesser crime. So they can't call him a murderer, but he was a murderer.
Oh. And they put him in a nursing home?
Well, Yep, he was, and it was funny because my dad was such a kind man. This other man, Joe, and there, it's very sad, you know. He used to come back from the hospital from, I guess he had cirrhosis of the liver or something like that, probably. But he'd come back, and my father would sit there and feed him. And then it got to the point, you know, my father is so kind-hearted, and then he'd turn on him as well as other people. He was just a very sad human being, and I know that it's just a sad commentary, but it's not where I wanted my dad to be. I even asked that court-appointed conservator, you know, if we could find another place for him. No,
he has to stay there.
And she had always had sanctions against me. If I took my father out and I was a minute late, I had to be punished. I had to forfeit seeing him or something. And then when that one time we went to New York and he was down there and she came and dragged him against doctor's orders, when they brought him back to the nursing home, they didn't even bring him to a hospital. And then they only let me see him an hour a day under supervision after that until we finally got him out. She just ignored all his wishes and rights. Every time he wanted to go to a hearing, she'd cut him off and wouldn't let him go. And it got to the point where my dad told me, Dee, they're trying to beat me down. He's a very strong human being, though, and even myself, you know, I was on the outside. It's so painful to watch somebody you love, and then also you're watching somebody that's being legally euthanized. You're supposed to stand by and watch that? I mean, it makes you get to a point where you say, where do you stop being compliant with the law? Because you're watching somebody you love be murdered, basically.
Yeah, and if you did that, if you or I did that, we'd be locked up.
Oh, this
yes.
is true. But it's, you know, sanctioned by courts, and
it charges
and they have their group and it's their club. I mean, Kangaroo Court is the judge. He appoints his handpicked crony, who's the conservator, and the attorney, who's his other court-appointed, who wants to please the judge. And then there's no justice for the person that's under their quote-unquote care. So the dictums that they have are just, you know, to keep somebody there and just use them up until they serve no purpose, and they use them for money.
Well, yeah, they get state and federal money for this funding for the guardianship.
They what?
Did you know that, Dee?
No, I thought
yes.
that the...
Yeah, they get
really?
State and federal funding for these guardianship
mm-hmm.
cases, especially in
And
New
that's
York.
On top of everything else.
Yeah.
I
insurance,
didn't know that. I
Medicare,
thought that
Medicaid...
Was...
And, you
it's
know,
all on
oh,
top
that's
of
right.
Everything.
Okay, right. They're using the federal money for that. You're right. You're right. And I have to wonder, you know, I mean, why did my father's fees go from $5,500 to $8,500 in such a short time for somebody who cared for themselves, you know? I mean,
uh-huh.
with the permission of the guardian? Come on. It's just a scam. They just have
my
set
own
up.
Line, Marty.
Yes.
Hi.
Yes.
Am I open online? I was just
yes,
going to chime in. You know, he was on a sliding scale, D. He had him. He had more money. They had to take more from him faster because they knew they weren't going to be able to hang on to him.
Okay,
that's why his fee
do.
Went up. It was a sliding scale. Went upward.
Yep. There you go.
I'm sorry. I thought I didn't know I was on an open line, but go ahead.
Yes.
Who is the gentleman that just came on?
Tim.
Oh, this is Tim Larman, Marty. Or I mean, D.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Hello. I think I've seen some of your notes on the NASGA site.
Yeah, we've had some emails and such. Yeah.
Yes. It's nice to hear a voice. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice
and,
to speak with you.
Thank
you're doing
you.
A good job, by the way. Doing a very good job.
Well, I got to save the people that really did the job with those, the ones that stood up for my dad, and I'm grateful.
Well, you're telling the story well, and you know it sounds an awful lot like Sarah's story with the constant sanctions against the family member, and you know they these people claim that the family member exercises poor judgment, but in the same breath, the medical events that occur to the family member in the care of these agencies is the same medical event that they fear the family member will be responsible for creating. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
You know, they say we have to protect this person because the family member is going to cause this, but
right.
in the same breath, the caretakers are in fact causing what everybody feared the family member was going to cause. It's just
right, and they use that as a, any time that family members don't get along, they use that as a springboard to actually insert themselves there and to take over
right.
somebody's rights, and that's sad. But I think that there should be, I think there should be groups formed. Public groups, not anything to do with the government, people that are watchdogs, and that they should be allowed to go into the nursing homes and be able to report back to whether it's the newspapers or, you know, have some interaction. I mean, generally I like to try and work together in harmonious situations, but when somebody's trying to control another human being's life and trying to color it a certain way, I think that there should be local watchdog groups to state that this is not fair, this is not right, this is what's wrong, and what can be done to change it. Because I don't think people should be victimized, and I don't think that we should be at the mercy. I don't think we should have to go to a town hall meeting and beg to be heard. I think that we should stand up and shout loud enough and say, this is what the law is, and you can't keep me from my family or my loved ones. I think that's
Amen.
Hideous.
I think one of the problems, one of the mistakes we make is when there are public meetings, we let them assemble them. We let them put them together and make their terms. That has to stop. You have to hold your own public meetings, invite them to it, tell them they have to sign up and state what they're going to speak about, and they got 3 minutes, just like they do you.
Yeah,
cut them out of the meeting, but hold those meetings yourself and invite the public to them and inform
good
people
idea.
What is happening.
You know
what happens?
Well, you know what?
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I can't wrap my head around this. All right, Adult Protective Services. You know, I called them up, the commissioner in Albany, and I was speaking with them the other day, and I said, Adult Protective Services. I said, protective. I said, they're supposed to protect the adults, right? Yeah, that's exactly what they're supposed to do. And I said, well, you tell me this. What am I supposed to do? What actions and steps am I supposed to take when Adult Protective Services petitioned the court to kill their ward? How is that protecting
what?
My husband?
Oh, my God.
You know, and they didn't have an answer for me. They did not have an answer for me. The lady got really nervous. Her name was Leslie. Got off the phone right away. You know, I'm going to have to refer you to somebody else. You know, and nobody called me back yet to answer that question for me.
Excuse me, I just want to say one thing. See, what happens is everybody's fragmented. You have a story, somebody else has a story, somebody else, but it doesn't all happen at the same time. So when we have these things happen, we're isolated from really receiving a lot of help because the people that are, you know, I mean, to have a group or have enough people on your side, it requires that you basically would have to have had you know, a group of people that would have understood the situation. So basically they're in a situation where you're fighting this alone. So the only way to do it is to really get something through the newspapers, to get people to hear your story. And unfortunately, a lot of times people just don't care about older, infirm people. So if it ends up being that you and I, because we have a commonality, can do something together, then we have to form some kind of connective bond, you know, so that we could channel and challenge. You know, otherwise they'll always win, and they're going to be more powerful. So you really have to get together and say, how are we going to go from state to state? I mean, each of the states, you know, you can try and find people within them. But if you don't have a strong enough unified body, nothing's going to change.
Can I chime in here just a second? And,
sure,
and I want to commend Dee for everything that she sacrificed to achieve the court ruling that she just got, because that court ruling is going to resound all over the country that these guardians are not free to make the decision that they damn well please.
Right.
The authority they're given by the court to make the decision does not mean that the decision they make is sanctioned by the court.
Correct.
The decision to tell a family member you can't come and see your parent is not automatically sanctioned by the court. Just because the court order says they get to decide who, you know, visitation issues, doesn't mean that they can violate everybody's rights with the decision they choose to make.
Right.
What I want to know is, why, when this is set into motion and these arbitrary edicts come out where you can't visit your family member, you can't visit without a, why don't you turn around and sue these people for violating your rights? Why don't you go?
I went, Marty, to New York and I tried to visit Gary Harvey. I walked in the hospital room. There was other advocates with me. And Sarah was along too, naturally. And within minutes, hospital staff came running in the room, wanted to know, you know, who you are, what are you doing here? I said, I'm here to visit Gary Harvey. You're not approved. I said, well, what did I ever do to Gary Harvey that my right of association and Gary's right of association has to be deprived between he and I? You know, what crime or what risk or what harm do I pose to Gary Harvey? Now, I know
right.
I pose a harm to them.
Right.
To the power people. Because, you know, what my next question was is, well, why don't you show me your court order that says I can't visit Gary Harvey?
Right.
Okay. Now,
I like your style, Tim.
Now, what happened next was they sanctioned Sarah. They pulled her visitation because of her recent conduct. Well, it wasn't her conduct.
What?
It was my conduct.
What, and that was in New York State?
Yeah, that
yeah.
was in New York State. And it happened more than once. You know, Sarah and I took positions in that hospital that, you know, you show me your court order. And they would call security and have us escorted out. And it got almost sadly comical because we'd be on the elevator with this security guy and I'd say, man, you know, I know you're just doing your job, but you're going to make a great witness when we get to court.
Well,
okay.
You know, first of all, I mean, we had some progress, and that's good, you know, with that court decision. However, I think there has
to
be more.
That's the decision this cause has been waiting for years, Dee. I've watched this guardianship litigation for years, and the precedent that your case is setting is remarkable, and it's going to resound, and it's going to pay off big for everybody.
Well, I hope so. And the other thing is, I hope, though, that's not where it ends. I think that, first of all, I think it should be against the law that any family member is ever isolated and kept from their families. I think,
you know,
that
it's a discriminatory act. It's a discriminatory act, and it maybe constitutes criminal confinement. Yes, it probably does.
Especially, Dee, if the family member hasn't done anything to harm.
Well, that's just it. They have to have cause,
no,
you know.
You can't just say that, first of all, excuse me, because if you do, they always use that ruse or that you know, they say, oh, you've hurt them in some way.
Well,
and they will
say,
use that every single time.
You know, Dee, to say it and prove it are two different things. And unfortunately, the court proceedings, as you said, they're kangaroo.
Mm-hmm.
And these, you know, these judges have to be held to a little more stringent practice when they get in the courtroom and demand some proof, you know. Just
right.
to say it doesn't mean that it's true.
Yeah, but you know what? You're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. Just
well, that's true.
It doesn't work that way with that, first of all. Not at all.
Yeah.
And then
well,
they
you know,
the
you know why? People
well, they need to change then.
Well, can I explain something to you right here?
Sure.
The criminal practice is you're innocent until proven guilty.
Mm-hmm.
On the civil docket, the papers that are filed first are presumed true. So you're immediately on the defensive.
Right.
Okay.
Oh,
it's,
wow.
The problem is in the civil rules of procedure and the way the law is practiced. The standards
are different.
Well,
then file a cross complaint. And then they can't throw either one out of court. They have to hear them both.
You know, you make a good point there, Marty. You make
well,
a good point.
And that's why they're trying to have, I mean, this follow the rules of the Superior Court. You know, before, you'd have to ask the judge for permission to go to a higher court, the same judge that's keeping you and keeping your rights from being upheld. So now they will not have to do that anymore. So I think that should be taken to higher court, and if that's where it's going to be answered properly or fairly, then that's the only way to go about doing it and bring it
well,
to a
I
higher
think it should
court.
Be I think there should be mandatory appeals in these cases because essentially the ward has received a death sentence.
Correct.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
all. They're just waiting.
And the ward never has an opportunity to appeal. Your
right.
father never had access to the court. I heard you say that the guardian wouldn't have let him go to court. Well, you know, how can you go take somebody to court and not let them come to court and participate?
Right.
And how can you deprive them of their right to review and appeal?
Because they use, well, I mean, they've given so much power, so they just
well,
go ahead
that's
and
a that's a discriminatory,
abuse it. So,
that's a
yeah.
discriminatory act under the ADA, too.
Okay,
you know, they're excluding the people from participating in the services of the government and the courts.
Right. And I think they want more and more of that. I'm sorry,
yeah.
Marty?
That's all right. We need to break here for a few minutes, and we'll be back and pick this up where we left off here.
Okay.
I think this discussion about how these courts work and what you can anticipate in a civil court, I think, is very necessary. So let's proceed with that when we come back, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Thank you. Okay.
Is your privacy important to you? Is having all of your assets well organized one of your priorities? Do you wonder if your business and personal estate will be protected for your family and not taken away by government bureaucracies? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then now's the time to find out about Freedom Bound International's Pure Trust. A Pure Trust organization is protected by the Constitution and is not subject to government regulation. Property held in a Pure Trust is free from liens, levies, or other actions filed against you. You can find out more about Freedom Bound International's Pure Trust and schedule a trust consultation simply by calling toll-free 1-888-385-FREE. That's 888-385-3733 or log on to www.freedomradio.us. Call us now for information and to schedule a trust consultation. 888-385-FREE. That's 888-385-3733 or online at www.freedomradio.us. Is your privacy important to you? Is having all of your assets well organized one of your priorities? Do you wonder if your business and personal estate will be protected for your family and not taken away by government bureaucracies? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then now's the time to find out about Freedom Bound International's Pure Trust. A Pure Trust organization is protected by the Constitution and is not subject to government regulation. Property held in a Pure Trust is free from liens, levies, or other actions filed against you. You can find out more about Freedom Bound International's Pure Trust and schedule a trust consultation simply by calling toll-free 1-888-385-FREE. That's 888-385-3733 or log on to www.freedomradio.us. Call us now for information and to schedule a trust consultation. 888-385-FREE. That's 888-385-3733 or online at www.freedomradio.us.
Somebody approached her in a bar and said she knew that Mandy wasn't driving. And she was a witness.
You guys still on?
I'm here.
Oh, hey, hi.
Hey, Marty.
Lost my audio there for a minute. Sorry.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Oh, I told you if that happens, just keep talking. Go on without me.
Okay. Well, I wasn't sure there, Marty. Okay.
Yeah, but I would like to pick back up with this presumption of the first charges levied being the truth. I think that's a very interesting concept, and quite frankly, it's one I haven't stumbled across before.
Well, you know, it exists in the rules of civil procedure, Marty. Okay, the pleading rules. You know, victims see their case for who did what when, you know, who said what on what day, blah, blah, blah. But the first thing a lawyer is going to do is attack you by virtue of the rules and how the rules are adhered to in the hearing procedures. And in civil practice, the complaint, the document that's filed first, is presumed to be true. For the purposes...
Yeah.
For the purposes of motions to dismiss.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, then I'm all the more convinced that what you need to do immediately is file a cross complaint.
Well, I think what happens in these cases of guardianship, Marty, is it creates an unconstitutional presumption of incompetence.
Okay.
Right.
You saw this in the D. King case. The attorney that was appointed immediately signed his court correspondence or something, attorney for the ward. And the judge had to correct him and say, no, you're the attorney for the respondent. He's not yet been made a ward.
Correct.
You defend him from becoming a ward.
Okay.
Right. Which
we have a caller. We have a caller on from area code 985. Did you have a question or a comment?
Hi. Calling from Louisiana. Just wanted to let you know that there's no sound on the website, on the blog
podcast.
Yeah, I don't know if it's with everybody, but it just went off, just to let you know.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Also, While I'm here, I just wanted to...
Thank you so much for letting us know. This is... It's just been an ongoing problem with Blog Talk. Like I say, this will all be available in the archive. It'll all be there if you replay the show. So let's go ahead and finish her up there.
She had a question.
That caller had something to say, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know that this guardianship... Pardon me. This guardianship business is not just for the infirmed and elderly. I know a lady that was put into a guardianship for the purpose of a divorce partition. The former spouse didn't want her to participate in the divorce partition, so his divorce attorney... I'm sorry, that's
fine. Hello?
We'll go ahead here. I don't know what was going on there in the background.
But that's kind of sad. I mean, how could a person in a divorce proceeding be appointed a... that doesn't make sense.
That's how it happened to me.
You're kidding.
How it happened in my life many, many years ago.
Oh.
Yeah,
oh,
wow. It was through a divorce proceeding.
Based on what? How did they do that?
They make an accusation of alcohol and drug abuse, and you know, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, you're in, you know.
Oh, I see.
Well, they just file a petition, and it doesn't matter whether the allegations on the petition are true or not.
Well, they're presumed true. They're presumed true.
And,
in your case, Tim, were they actually true?
No, they were not true. I ran a successful business, and there was a substantial estate involved, and you know, it was the convenient way to disable your adversary.
Sure.
And take everything.
They must have had a strong lawyer.
Well, typically, you'll find that the lawyers involved in these cases are politically connected.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot imagine the political connections in the Gary Harvey case.
Isn't that a joke?
The judge in this case in Louisiana, the divorce attorney waited until this particular judge was seated, and then this judge appointed his best friend's wife as the guardian of this lady. And then they proceeded to take... near $500,000 in assets.
Yeah.
I hear this all the time, but my question is, how do we stop that? I mean, what can you do that's effective that can stop that? I mean,
in my opinion, like I say, instead of going to these people in Washington, D.C., who really just don't give a flying flip, they don't want to be bothered. They're only there. I mean, I watched some of these Senate hearings and committee hearings, and some of these people actually dozed off. They are not interested. And so it's pointless to go to them. We don't have any representation, not even on the state level. So, like I say, having thought about this carefully for quite some time, the only thing I can do is, like, go to these, like we up in St. Cloud, Minnesota, have the Whitney Senior Care Center, and it's a gathering place for elderly people. and mm-hmm. begin to hold meetings there. Invite these people who are directly involved, these corrupt judges, these predatory guardians, the attorneys, and tell them you sign up and, you know, put them under the same gun they put us when they claim they have a public meeting. And then you start informing those people about what is being done and who's doing it. And I think this is the best way. The other thing, and I'm going to throw this in here quickly, and we've got a lot of this going on here where I'm located. We keep getting these mailers about, you know, avoid guardianship, avoid conservatorship, you know, plan your estate. These people are data mining. They are data mining. Before you can get into this meeting, you have to fill out an asset survey, tell them everything you've got, where it's located, how much it's worth. And you are put on a list if you go into a hospital or if you use the emergency room. If you even go through a surgery and need temporary nursing home care while you recover, they will nail you.
That's how they got Dee's dad, Marty, was through a hospital administration.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's how one of the people from the hospital actually
they got Gary Harvey. They got Gary Harvey through a nursing home admission. Gary went to for respite care while Sarah arranged home care. Gary went to the county nursing facility. The county nursing facility.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as soon as she wanted to take him out of the county nursing facility, as soon as there were quality of care issues, they had to attack Sarah.
Of course, yeah.
Okay.
You know, the thing is that so many people are apathetic until anything happens to them. So how do you get people to be on board? How do you get people to become aware?
I think we need some high-profile prosecutions. If we had a few high-profile prosecutions, the word would go out. And if there was a good, effective legal advocacy organization that could roam around and pick these cases up and litigate them effectively, I think you would see. This practice moderate itself some.
Right. I have to tell you too. In the beginning, I had a couple of very wonderful attorneys that I had met that were afraid to say anything because they have to go before that judge. So
well, you know, they sanction the attorneys. They sanction the attorneys. Look around. You know, Barb Johnson lost her law license for taking them on over in Boston in their probate courts.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Excuse me,
Sarah? I don't think you can you can't let up, though. I mean, once you make some progress, you can't let up. You have to keep going.
Absolutely.
And then hope that there are people that have conscience and do care.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's the only way. I mean, without that, you'll have nothing. You'll have, you know, just... what any lawlessness?
You're absolutely correct,
Dee. Well, this whole thing, Bev and Ken Cooper, out of Chicago, of course, run a cable news show because they have to give you equal access on that. On a public station, and they had suggested, you know, that people, Dee, to me, you sound very qualified to do it. In your area, you see if you could establish, you can make your own films at home wherever you want to, and you just send into them, they play them, or you can do it live in their studios. And this is one avenue. We've got, I totally agree with you. It's one thing to complain, and we've all done it, and we've done the legal channels, going to the senators, the representatives, the committees, everybody and anybody. I myself, about 7-8 months ago, contacted the DOJ, sent them a stack of documents, court certified documents, and had highlighted where these judges had violated people's civil rights, had broken the law, had issued erroneous orders. That was terrible. And I also added a list of the assets stolen per case.
Yeah.
And they sent it back to me and said, with a letter on top that said, "We received your documents. Don't contact us again."
Really?
Yes. This is your Department of Justice. So
why don't you go on one of the TV shows then and say that? I mean, why don't you bring that to attention? Are there any people that are in the public eye that want to talk about anything besides Lindsay Lohan? I mean, come on, there's got to be some people out there. Did you try Oprah Winfrey or some other?
Oh, we tried Oprah. We have tried Dr. Phil. No, and Dr. Phil did a limited show on it. Very limited.
I think there's an editorial block on the subject matter.
Yes. You can't get a newspaper, you cannot get a TV station or a syndicated radio station, an FM, AM station, to even touch this. They will not touch it.
Not with an investigative news report. You'll get some little sound bites out and around. You know, Sarah gets a lot of media, but it's you know, woman files lawsuit, and then there's the, you know, a little brief story, and that's the end of it, you know.
Right, right.
But they won't do any coverage. There's been over the years here, the last couple of years, CNN, MSNBC, even Fox at one point supposedly was going to launch a big investigation, and they were going to do an expose on this, and they talked to many people, and then, boom, it fell off the radar, and if you contacted them, they didn't know what you were talking about.
Yep.
And there is a blackout, a media blackout on this, and it goes on in every state. That's why I say you have to step outside of that. You have to step outside of that and the control of these so-called public meetings, which are nothing public.
Years ago, Marty, the Indianapolis Star did an investigative expose on the guardianship of Ruth Lilly. She was the sole heiress to the Eli Lilly. Now, you know, she'd been under guardianship since she was like 51 years old or something like that, and she was a recluse. Nobody saw her. She had billions of dollars, lived in a massive mansion, and, you know, she would take entourages of, you know, 600 people and go to Florida or go to Paris and bill her guardianship estate, and it was just a big fiasco, you know. Well, they did an investigative expose on her guardianship, and it was an award-winning piece of journalism. And I tried to talk to our local newspaper here, the editor. We went to breakfast one morning, and I said, "Man, I got a story that's award-winning journalism." And the guy says to me, "We're not interested in award-winning journalism. We are here to build a community."
Oh, and communities don't benefit from award-winning journalistic...
Well, you know, interesting enough, the guy's a psychology major from the University of Indiana. And, you know, what I heard him say was, "We're social engineering. We don't want to tell people what we're really up to." You know, a few weeks after that, he ran a big editorial of his own about how he was putting his dog down and whether or not he would miss his dog because it was just so burdensome to care for his aging dog. And, you know, he's promoting euthanasia. He's promoting the right to die.
Well, Jim, here's another thing. Here just recently I put an article up on the PPJ, and it was about these what they call now afterbirth abortions. And this is the coming thing, which will coincide coincidentally with certain caveats in Obamacare. If you reach a certain age, we're not going to provide you any health care because you're just not worth it.
Right.
And,
well, the return on the investment's no good.
I just want to interject one thing there. I don't have any health insurance. I don't want any. I'm telling you why.
Amen.
I don't want any medications. I don't believe in them. If I get hit by a car, bring me to a hospital, have them sew me back together. But most people, no, I'm serious. Take care of your own health. Be responsible for your own health. Don't put yourself in a position where you're at the mercy of others, because I don't want to be pumped up with a bunch of drugs.
The question I ask when I hear him say preventative care, does that mean intervention care?
Well, and that's the thing. But see, the social engineering thing, we are being steered towards, not only are people oblivious and apathetic to the issue at hand of the abuse of the elderly while they steal their assets and the absolute abject misery these people live in while they allow them to die or hurry them along. But now we're going to the other end where if your child is born, they don't want to issue a birth certificate for 3 days till they determine if it's genetically sound, make sure it's not impaired in some way. And two questions, and I think this is insidious because they are trying to apply these same two questions to our elderly. Can you afford them, and do you in fact want them? And somehow this is a prerequisite now for life. And you're going to see this moved even more to the forefront. This kind
there
of
was a
what, are you saying? What was the question and being what, asked of whom? What?
Well, what they want to do, and they're beginning this already in Australia, if when a child is born, they call it afterbirth abortion. They are withholding the birth certificate for 3 days. And
oh
they are,
God.
During that 3 days, they are determining if the child is genetically sound, if it has any kind of impairment. But the two main questions they ask is, do you want this child? Can you afford this child? And we are
Gee,
going
I'm
to be
so
asking.
Glad I had, so glad I had my
yeah.
daughter at home.
Well, there you go. But see, we're moving to the point where we're going to start asking this as Obamacare comes in about
mm-hmm.
our elderly and our disabled. Do you
yes.
want them? Can you afford them?
Yes.
No,
and,
just get rid of them.
Yes, and we're going to accept euthanasia under those tenets.
Yes,
and,
you're right, Marty.
I agree
and
with
it,
you. Yeah.
It's all hooked together. So when you see these things rolling in, you need to stand up and pay attention. These are not idle threats.
You know,
but people don't seem to be aware of it. It kind of shocks me that they're
Marty,
even aware.
There is an absolutely excellent documentary. The BBC did it many years ago, and it's from captured World War II films from Nazi Germany, and it's titled Selling Murder. And it's how Nazi Germany used the media and movies and mass propaganda, mass psychology, to convince citizens that some life was not worthy of living.
Exactly.
Okay.
And you know, I looked for
and
that
they used the,
and I
they
can't
used,
find it.
Well, I know. It's available in some libraries. I caught it the other day on a list of libraries, and I'll find that link and send it to you again.
Okay.
Or send it
okay.
to you, okay?
Yes.
It was an excellent, excellent film. And they used the theories of Darwinism. They used the theories of survival of the fittest and the animal
mm-hmm.
kingdom. So when I talk about the editor writing about putting down his dog, he's really talking about softening the emotional impact of putting down grandma.
Hmm.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
There was an
and,
article
and
in the New York Times the other day about a dog, a guy who had a dog with cancer. Should you spend $25,000 on treating your dog for cancer? Okay, and again, they're trying to just subtly sell to people that, you know, there's a financial equation that attaches to the quality of life.
Right. That's true.
And that's what
well,
Obamacare,
I
think that's what Marty's saying about Obamacare.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, the
yes.
middle class is being definitely
wiped
pushed
out.
Into, yes, is being
yes.
wiped out. And that also goes hand in hand with when you serve your purpose, they can eliminate you, basically. You serve
mm-hmm.
no further purpose. So,
Soylent Green.
You know, yeah.
Soylent Green.
So why should you be on the planet anymore?
Yeah.
They
yeah.
extorted
well,
or extracted whatever's worthwhile.
You know, it's
now
the
you
eugenicist can... movement with a different face on. It's what it is.
Yes. Yes, it
you
is.
Know?
And
it,
when we
got...
start culling our population based on you got too old to work and now we don't want you anymore,
mm-hmm.
and we can just do whatever we want to you, including taking whatever you got.
Well, you know what I espouse, Marty? I think all the retirees ought to take their property and their money, turn it into cash, go move to Costa Rica. Denounce your U.S. citizenship and tell them to go to hell and stick it, you know.
Well, that's another thing that's happening, too. We were discussing this on a show on Monday with Brent Johnson, whose ads I've been running on breaks there. Setting up these pure trusts, but we have 3 to 4 million people expatriating and moving out of the country every year to get out of here.
Because of these very
yes.
things, yes.
Yes.
They're
yeah, getting
they
out of here.
They see it coming.
Well, and the
Which
thing
is very
too,
sad.
I hear from people all over, like in England and France and people in Australia and New Zealand, they're doing the very same things to their people there.
Yes, they are.
They are doing. People are contacting me saying, you know, it isn't just happening in the U.S. They're doing the same thing here, and it
everywhere in the Anglo world. You won't
yes.
find the Asians doing this to their family members.
No, no, not yet. Anyway,
not yet.
And,
well, I think Hispanic and Asian cultures do revere their elderly. I think the Italians still do. There are different ethnicities that seem to. revere their older people more so. I think what's happened is we've become disenfranchised from one another. I mean, everything with technology, right from the time that Women's Lib started, I happen to be an independent woman, but I certainly respect any woman that stays home and takes care of and raises a well-adjusted human being that's not a discredit to society and or a drain to society. And whatever our choices are, we should be proud of them and know that what's right for one isn't always right for the other one. But we can't just sit around. I mean, we've become a celebrity. We've become a voyeuristic culture where everything is geared towards, you know, who's the prettiest, who's the thinnest, who's the richest. And that's sad. I mean, we can go on and we can find the and see all the faults and the flaws. But right now, I think the only way for us to change anything within our own spectrum here is I think we have to keep on these legislators. We have to keep, you know, as a group, you have to keep going there, and you can't let relent. You have to really let them know that these are the things people want, and maybe enough people. I mean, they've had different groups that have gotten together because they don't like the way they see things in America. And if people are willing to stand up for something and shout about it, maybe things can change. But I think that I still think there are more good people in the world, so I'm happy about that. Maybe I'm wrong, but I still believe that. And with that in mind, I think that we have to align ourselves with other people and let them be educated and share the information. And then even if we're going to the elderly daycare centers and stuff and start talking to people before they become victimized, I think that's really all you can
do. Well, and in the same breath, we have to save the ones that are in there, Dee.
Definitely.
You know,
we can't
let these people have the Gary Harveys and just run free as they want, you know.
You can't turn your back on people that require and need our help, because that's not fair. I mean, one of the things I know when we got out of that court, I have to tell you that we had a six-hour court hearing after the probate, and we went to the Superior Court in Connecticut. And at one point, the judge asked me, while I was on the stand, you know, what would I do if he let my father go? And I said, I'd help him. And he said, and what would your father want? And without thinking, I looked out and I said, what do you want, Dad? And he said, to go home. And the court, and I can feel the electricity in the air to this day. I can feel my arms and spine tingle when I think of that. That's all he wanted, was to have his own independence and freedom, and he wanted that so badly, and he wasn't willing to give up.
Well, I heard Sarah say earlier, and it's so true, that these appointed guardians and these attorneys and judges, they're so drunk on their power, and they really don't apply the proper rule of law that they should. People such as your dad and Gary and, you know, adults that find themselves in these positions, the guardian is supposed to make the decision that the ward would make if the ward were competent to make that decision.
Oh, that's not so at all.
Well, that's
that not
really
what
is,
happened.
That really is the rule of law. If you read a case like Cruzan versus the director of Missouri Department of Health, where they're dealing with an incompetent, persistent vegetative state adult, the Supreme Court has said that were they competent to decide is the answer that the court and the guardian are supposed to answer. What is their decision if they were competent to decide? And these guardians come in and go, well, I'm deciding.
Like
in the case of Gary Harvey. The guardian says, Gary Harvey goes to this hospital and this hospital only. Well, is that the choice Gary would make? And, you know, given the quality of care that Gary's received in that hospital, would Gary want to stay in that hospital?
Would anybody want to?
We're down
here to about a minute and a half left, people. Dee, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I don't know what you were worried about. You're very articulate and interesting to listen to, and that was an inspiring story.
Thank you for having me and the Tims and the other people that, I mean, I think everybody
spoke.
Real quick
on the way out here, Dee, you're talking about organizing and helping out, and, you know, Sarah could really use you had a New York attorney over there in Connecticut, guy's licensed in New York, Brendan or something like that. He's with the LSO up there in Middleton.
Barrent, Tom Barrent.
Yeah, Barrent. Do everything you can, please, Dee, to get Barrent and Sarah connected together.
Okay, email me.
Okay, she needs a mouth. She needs a mouthpiece in court. Something.
Yes.
Something fierce.
Yes.
If she had a mouthpiece in court, Gary Harvey'd be free tomorrow.
Send me that information. I will definitely do my best. Dee, the number 2, King at AOL.com.
Oh, I've got your email.
I know you do too.
Okay. Thank you kindly.
All right.
Thank you,
thank you everyone for coming on. Thank you, Jim, Sarah.
Thank you, Marty.
And
thank you all.
We'll be doing this again.
Okay.
We need to keep this updated. Dee, I want to have you back on too to talk more about this. Sarah, of course, we're always going to have you back on.
Sure.
We'll be picking these shows back up again as I get a little bit of steam under me here once more. We'll be back next Tuesday with the show, Barb and I, if she's got the Seed Lady Network set up and finished designing the website, which is a new site that we're opening up. And I got 10 seconds. Thank you, everyone in the chat room. Thank you, everyone that called in. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Marty.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Good night.